Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
16 years have passed since the Black Crowes last put out an album of all new material. The world's changed a lot since then, and it appears so have the Robinson Brothers. Kris and Rich Robinson are, of course, the backbone of the group. They started together back in Georgia in 84 as Mr. Crow's Garden before moving to NYC, signing with Deaf American, and changing their name to the Black Crowes. The band's debut album, Shake Your Moneymaker, set them up as torchbearers of Southern rock for the 90s and beyond. As you'll hear in our conversation, the brothers Robinson have had a competitive relationship for a long time. Their ups and downs have meant hiatuses for the band over the years, but now they're back united and seemingly in it for the long haul with their new album, Happiness Bastards. On today's episode, I talked to Kris Robinson about his growing up in Georgia with Rich, their dad's rockabilly career, his listening routine that includes Sudanese and Sufi music, and how his road habits have changed from indulging in champagne and other substances to reading Herman Melville. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's my conversation with Kris Robinson of the Black Crowes.
Is that a Gun Club, like the band shirt that you got on?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I love Gun Club, man.
Jeffrey Lee Pierce, one of my faves. And it's funny because, you know, when we started, people would always say we sounded like, and we did. We had, you know, there was the jangle sort of indie pop thing, REM, of course, being the purveyors of that, but Let's Active and the DBs, and then bands from California like Game Theory. We kind of were into like this kind of jangly 60s inspired, but we really sounded early days a lot like the Gun Club, you know, because Gun Club and X are very interesting to me in the like early punk scene here in Los Angeles, because they were the, well, I guess you could put the Blasters and the Plugs in there too.
Blasters are from SF, though, right?
Oh, Blasters are an LA band, too. Yeah.
Are they? Oh, okay, cool.
They had those kind of rootsy things, you know? And it would be really early on that we would think, like, okay, well, Jeffrey Lee Pierce is like a punk icon, but he plays a Robert Johnson song on the first record, you know? I mean, it doesn't sound like Robert Johnson, but needless to say, he found great inspiration and the mythology and the imagery and the vibration of like the blues and stuff, which other punk bands really didn't.
Whatever music is happening in LA, there's always some subset of it that countryfies it. You know, it's like even with the Birds, like Sweetheart of the Rodeo, like all that stuff, like the Birds got into that. And, you know, I don't know, you could even feel that with Buffalo Springfield. Or, I mean, I know like Neil's from Canada or whatnot, but they're making music here, you know?
Of course, of course. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, while that's going on, Tim Buckley's here. And you know what I mean? And while that's going on, you have bands like the Chambers Brothers and Eric Burdon leaves the Animals and a Northern English white band playing blues music. And then he's the lead singer of War.
And War is like such a quintessential L.A. Long Beach, in fact, group, you know?
I mean, I think obviously their subsequent most famous records don't include Eric Burdon.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It also just goes to show how that's just how music is, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you obviously you can make examples of things that seem heavy handed or things that don't contain a certain authenticity. But I mean, that was a big deal when I, you know, talking about growing up in a band, being from Atlanta, being like in a arguably the most progressive city in terms of race relations in, if not America, and maybe globally.
That's interesting. It probably has to be. I mean, you might, I might have been tempted to say New Orleans, but I think when you kind of look at the musical legacy of Atlanta over the last.
I mean, New Orleans most definitely, but Atlanta's different because of the Black universities.
Yeah.
Like kind of concentrated there, and Atlanta having Maynard Jackson as the first Black mayor, the first Black police chief, first Black police force in the Deep South.
Yeah. When I first landed in Atlanta, I got to say, coming from L.A., because I grew up in L.A., when I first landed in Atlanta, and I'm in the airport, I'm like, where am I? Like, how is the whole airport is Black? This is crazy. It was the weirdest experience for me.
Well, funny, that's funny. And as I said, I'm a third generation Atlantan, and I don't really make the connection of being like, I'm a Southern person, but my connection is with Atlanta.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's funny because Maynard Jackson's the guy who, when Hartsfield International Airport becomes an international airport, he's the one who's like, we're not doing anything unless Black business owners are recognized and have a piece in this and what that can mean for the community. Something very subtle like that still reverberates, I think. And besides the culture, because you start to see Atlanta also be a city, you know, famous for the musicians and the hip hop and the athletes that all move there. But the reason that becomes attractive is because of decisions like that and the hard line that someone like Maynard Jackson would take and how Atlanta had been pried open. Of course, having the great Reverend be from there, you know, gives Atlanta a different perspective. But I don't know, it's a unique place in that way. And it's funny, like I speak on it from the past because I really left. First check I got in the Black Crowes, I moved to New York. Being in a band to me was like, you know, shooting an arrow over the mountain. Like just, I wanted to get out in the world.
Had you been to New York before you moved there?
Yeah. Actually, you know, our dad, Rich and I's dad, was a singer. He had a top 40 rock and roll hit in the 50s called Boom A Dip Dip. You can check it out on Spotify.
I've listened to some of that stuff. It's really good, man. It's really good.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's like really happening. And he lived in New York and he was like, you know, into the theater and music and acting and dance, you know, so he wanted that too at a certain time in his life. And he was in New York. And it's funny, my mom was a flight attendant for the old Eastern Airlines. And you know, it's funny, she told me, she goes, oh, I served Dr. King many times on flights out of Atlanta.
Wow.
Which I always like really blew my mind as a kid, you know.
Of course you did. How many flights out of Atlanta must he have taken?
All the time, you know. So I moved to New York first, and I still love New York. And some of my deepest connections and friendships are there. My wife and I just got back from there yesterday. But I came to Los Angeles, and I don't know, it was farther away.
From Georgia?
Yeah, from everything.
Okay,
I mean,
yeah.
California as an idea, California, later I would get to know far more about this state. And I lived up north for 6 years, and I was in this little hippie band, and we did 9 weeks just up and down California in a van, playing all the little beach towns and hippie towns. And, you know, I got a real appreciation for, do you remember Huell Howser?
Oh, come on, man. California's gold, baby.
I was like the psychedelic Huell Howser. You know what I mean? You know, Huell Howser was always like, so this is an Adobe.
Wow. He was amazed about everything, too.
He's like, so this is a bowl of menudo. I love Uelhauser.
R.I.P. The late great, man.
The late great Uelhauser, man. I love, and you know what? He was always so excited. He saw every mission from San Diego to, like, you know, the Oregon border. So that is the mission. Like, so excited.
Everything was ecstatic to him. It was crazy. It was that was a funny show to watch, man.
I loved it. When I moved here, I was like, what is this? This is fantastic. I also am lucky that when I moved here in 91, early 92. That was the golden age of public television.
Yeah.
I mean, the weirdest of the weird stuff would come on TV, man, on the couple of public stations on your cable, like Channel 6 and Channel 14 or whatever. The most unimaginably, I mean, obviously, like Tim and Eric. I don't know if you ever got into Tim and Eric.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Hilarious.
So Tim and Eric, like, take the inspiration of that into their twisted world for that series, which is still some of my favorite stuff. You don't need a Chinese massage. You need an Italian massage. It was fantastic. You know what I mean? And you know, the other thing about things that were really, I've always been interested in outsider culture, you know, when those would be like driven by like this, but because it's Hollywood, it made it even weirder. Like, I'm on TV now, I'm famous too. You know what I mean? It's kind of predated the psychosis that has become social media, you know?
Yeah, yeah. People always describe LA when they come to LA as being closer to the industry, as being closer to things. But I also find that you can find your niches and stay way out of the way of the industry if you want.
I did it, yeah. I mean, when I moved to Topanga Canyon at a certain point, I moved to Topanga because I had these romantic notions of what Northern California, and well, I've been to Northern California, but what it might feel like not to be in LA, but to still be able to be in LA for different reasons. I'm of the firm belief that Los Angeles is one of the great cities in the world. Which is also unique because of how new this city is comparatively. In 1860, there's 5,000 people living here.
That's wild.
Ranchers and spread out, and it's just come over from Mexican rule and stuff, from that government. And they had, gave everyone deeds to these massive fincas and ranches and things that were all of California, you know. So it's not that old in the big scheme of things. But the other funny thing is when I came here, I laugh all the time because it's like, growing up in Atlanta or whatever, I had my first sushi in 1989. Like, this guy ended up being our manager, like, took me and Rich with some friends to get sushi. And that place was called Imperial Gardens or whatever. It was right there on Sunset. It's now like a taco place or something, but it was the Roxbury later. But anyway, we're sitting there and, like, of course I know what it is, but I've, you know, Stan and Nancy Robinson in Atlanta, we didn't do sushi. You know what I mean? Like, I remember being 16 and telling my dad, like, coming downstairs one day, I was like, why have we never had Indian food? My dad was like, you're right, we should go get it. And I was like, we all drove to the one Indian restaurant, you know, and it was amazing.
Wow.
But when I'm here in 1989, I'm still working on the first album and I'm a kid from Atlanta. But the cool thing is, it's a mentality. You get farther away from where you come from, and like anything else, you figure out what's delicious about it and what's special about it. And now it has a place in your culinary, like, thing. Yeah. That, like, tonight's sushi, we want to go, and you know what I mean? And then you can enjoy it on another level. But there was one time where I come to LA, I don't know anything about anything, and I don't even know what this is.
How far removed from Atlanta do you feel now? Like, do you feel like an Atlantan?
I mean, not especially. And none of that is to be taken as if Atlanta has feelings. I do love Atlanta more than ever, but it's also, I like the remnants of the Atlanta that I remembered.
So when you go back, you don't see the...
I mean, man, it's changed. There was this thing on Peach Street called the Darlington Apartments, and there used to have this digital thing, and it would be like, 2,999,000, you know, and it was the population, and it got older with the population sign, it got bigger, and it went to 3 million in 1990.
Wow.
You know, we used to hang around this monthly thing called the Mud Shack and this after hours Mexican burrito place, and it was a poetry reading, and just the poet would get on stage like, I live in a city of 3 million people, as if it was like, you know, this Atlanta, this It's almost 8 million people now.
Yeah, it's, yeah, right. That sounds about right. It's huge.
So when I'm there, I mean, of course I love it, but most, a lot of the Atlanta, you know, the house where we used to rehearse and have parties is now the Federal Reserve. The club that we based all our rock and roll dreams and mythology on is now at a, you know, place where people go get stitches or whatever. You know what I mean? Like all of that kind of stuff from back in the 80s when the world was new and music was all our career was ahead of us. That's all kind of gone.
Yeah.
You can see the skeleton of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We'll come back with more of my interview with Chris Robinson after this quick break.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs, on-demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Chris Christopherson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
We're back with Chris Robinson.
Do you get excited to tour these days? Like, can you still get excited about it?
I do. It was funny. I've done a couple of interviews for this project, and I'm like shocked that the people have said, you're the first musician who says they still find inspiration doing what you do. And being on tour, they say, is so boring. I'm like, I've never lost the dream. And again, I've never been bored. You know what I mean? Even as a kid, like if my mom and dad go to your room, I'd be like, I'm amazing. That's all I want to do. All my records are in there. The books I'm reading are in there. I can draw. I can dream. You know what I mean? Daydream. I mean, I was somewhere, there's a permanent record of me, and all it says is prone to daydreaming. Not very good at math.
Yeah, right.
But I was saying, I mean, it's just the way it is. I mean, is it tedious sometimes? Fuck yes. I'm 57 now. Airports fucking suck.
Yeah.
Not every gig is a magical experience, but you never know who you're going to meet. And it could be anyone. It could be the Guyanese Uber driver who picked you up in St. Louis, who's fucking hilarious, an amazing, soulful person who's left a life behind to try to eke out something better, and like is so brave and courageous, and you know, you and you're only with this person 8 minutes from the airport or whatever, and you just two people in the world laughing in a car, you know. But that little thing, that doesn't even necessarily have to be a part of the narrative. It just has to be a part of that you still believe that there's dynamic in meeting people and talking and laughing and sometimes crying. But I'm just naive enough to still see it as in the same way that I picked music on a lot of levels because I knew it was the one thing that I would travel all the time.
Yeah.
And then you set up your little thing and then you put your vibes out there, you know?
That is pretty rare. I feel like listening to you talk, the only other person who has had a level of success that you've had and tours as much as you do and travels as much as you do that seems to still love it. I got lucky. I met Quincy Jones in Havana maybe 10 years ago.
Wow.
And the joy he has to like travel and just talk to anybody. It's like, he's like, yeah, he'll tell Sinatra stories and he'll tell the story about like the cab driver in like Memphis. And you're just like, everything is like new and fun and interesting in every person and everything and every sound and every, there's a particular joy that you don't find in a lot of people.
Like I said, I understand, and you know, you get older. It also helps in my life that after all the rock and roll and all the experiences that I found Camille, my wife, because I found someone who she understands that some of that is problematic and some of it's a pain in the ass. And some of it's like, can't we just do normal something? And like, by the way, we can talk about that and do our best. But then she also realizes like she's an artist and she's a Pisces queen, moonstone child out in the world, you know, who wants to feel these things too. And, you know, my thing is the pandemic was such a fucking head trip.
Yeah.
Personally, I didn't really find it creative. I found it stifling, but we were lucky enough to live out in the wilds of West Marin. And then we were in Southwest Colorado.
Amazing.
Yeah, which was really, really hell. But one thing I thought I would really flip out on was it was the first time since I was basically a teenager where I wasn't working and touring and singing and playing and doing the whole spiel. And you know what? It was rad.
Oh, shit, really? You liked it?
Wow. My head didn't fall off. You know, our lives didn't, you know, disintegrate into nothing. It was nice. I had time for a lot of other things. And it's funny, the travel part of it, I was just talking to my manager, Mark, last night about how at a certain point it would be nice to bow out from performing the way we perform before I can't, because I love the travel and we fit in the things that we want to, but it's different to be in a place for, you know, we're going to Paris. I'm going to see my friends. I know all the restaurants I want to go to. I know all the things I want to do, but you got to leave in 2 days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you have a show. When I was a kid, I didn't care. We would just party, go out, champagne, drugs, this, that, 2 days, do the gig, go back, do it again, do the gig, you know, like.
It's all one thing. It wasn't.
But when you're young, you can do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't feel that now. I'm really happy being in the Black Crowes and really fulfilling and satisfying and gratifying. But at a certain point, I just want to take my wife and go to Sicily and eat linguine and clams and like, you know, drink wine and, you know, read Moby Dick for the third time or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just want to just be a part of everything going on. There's lots of places I haven't traveled. I haven't been to Africa. I've always wanted to go to Africa. You know what I mean? That would be nice to have some time to do that. And because Africa is such a huge thing to, you know, I'm really interested in West Africa. I'd like to go to North Africa. It'd be cool to see East Africa. It'd be cool. You know what I mean?
What interests you in West Africa?
I don't know. I think maybe it has something to do just with the, I mean, I love North African music, but there's, you know, a lot of those West African music could be because of the horrors of mankind and the horrors of the slave trade.
Yeah.
Human beings found a way somehow through the vileness of that to communicate and share things in art and music, cuisine.
Yeah.
So many African parts of, especially in the Deep South, and people wouldn't, they don't even know they're yep. undereducated anyway. But with these things, you know, it's like, oh, every Southern person loves to eat fried okra, but okra came over from Africa, you know?
Right.
Before that, okra came from India to Africa. So just dumb things like that, plants and fruits, vegetables, natural things and supernatural things that were brought over that could never be extinct with.
Yeah.
And I just have some sort of, and I don't even know what it is because I'm not obviously that knowledgeable as other people, but I can put a few things together and realize, you know, so much of the music, singing, rhythm things, guitar things, especially string things, come from a West African musical tradition that represents like this African mysticism and magic as well that manifests when people express themselves vocally and rhythmically and with melody and things, you know, like a simple as something like a string guitar. And that is something that would draw me there first.
Amazing.
I see that in a first person and see what it feels like for me as a real outsider.
Yeah.
Outsider culture is important to me just because of whether my dyslexia or just whatever my tastes and my where I would find the things in life that are interesting, that make me happy, things that I can understand or help me for things that I don't understand to understand, you know? So a lot of that you have to kind of just vibe out and viscerally find. And I would be curious to see what it feels like.
Yeah. Wow, we've gone from like psychedelic Huell Hauser to like psychedelic like Anthony Bourdain or some shit. We've gone global now.
Call my agent. I'm down to do this job.
That's amazing, man. I want to check out like Robert Plant goes to
Morocco.
Yeah.
Yeah, he loves the Sufi music and the North African music.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I have this app where you can listen to radio stations all over the world, but it's like, wow, right on, man. I want to listen to some like rad Cambodian music. It's like, it's Nicki Minaj, like everywhere else.
Whatever, yeah. You know? I know that's kind of a bummer about radio now.
I mean, it's like, which is cool. I'm not bagging Nicki Minaj, but I'm like, I'm thinking I'm going to like get hip to some thing I've never heard, some regional vibes or whatever. And it's like, oh, it's the same shit they're playing here.
Is it that radio app? Like the, yeah, a lot of the O's? It's so cool.
But there's some in Morocco. And then there's a certain kind of music that the horrors of things. There was a slave trade in Africa for a long time, too. You know,
within
Africa. And they're bringing sub-Saharan Africans to North Africa. But a great musical art form is born from it that still exists today. And there's whole radio stations that play it. And they're basically a living blues. It's the same tradition of like the pain and suffering of the blues that these people brought with them that still lives today and is now celebrated as rebel songs almost.
Yeah. It's like those North African like guitar, like, I don't know how to pronounce their names, but like
Narwin is like
Narwin or something. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I saw their first show in New York many years ago.
Really?
I love that music and I love Sudanese music. And then you go over, I love Persian classical music. I love Sufi music from Afghanistan, and I love Turkish music. You know, I really have a lot of diverse interest in things like that.
After this last break, we'll be back with more of Chris Robinson. Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Chris Christopherson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room.
Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segui, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
We're back with the rest of my conversation with Chris Robinson. Within the Crows, like maybe like with your brother, for instance, does he have a similar musical palette?
I think he has an appreciation. I don't think his palette is as wide as mine. And he would admit that. I'm not, you know, he always said, like, growing up, like, Chris would bring back way more records than I would listen to, or some I wouldn't be interested in, but I got to, he could be able to cherry pick what he liked. And he loves classical Indian music. I listen to like Mesopotamian sheep herder music and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, wow. I'm really into a lot of different things.
Do you listen to that stuff more than like rock and roll? Like, you'd rather reach for that than a Stones record?
No, I listen to things all day long. Like, I like to start the morning with something mellow. We'll listen to a lot of Indian classical music. Or personally, I like to start my mornings with the late, great Ben Webster or something. Lester Young, I love the Prez, you know, but we also love Rahsaan Roland Kirk, and we love Thelonious Monk, and we love Bobby Timmons, Bud Powell. We listen to a lot of jazz. Yeah. We listen to a lot of blues, country, R&B, funk, soul, rock and roll, punk music, post-punk music, electronic music, new age music. Rasta music, you know.
Dog, share your Spotify right now. Share that Spotify. I'm trying to plug in, man.
Don't have Spotify envy, man. You know, like, I'm just obsessed. You know what I mean? And my obsessions maybe made me way more difficult as a youth in the music business, because I also associated a certain authenticity, passion, and purity to my obsessions and what I wanted to say. But I also have a waking life with music that has nothing to do with me making music or being a musician.
Yeah.
Those things are simpatico, but I'm sure it's annoying. I'm the guy who, I get the car to drive down to eat dinner in West Hollywood. I'm like, hey, man, can I play the Spotify?
Oh, yeah, in the car. Dude, I got us kicked out of a sushi spot one time because I asked them to change the music.
Wow,
and then they opened the same sushi spot across town. So when we tried to go there a year and a half later, it turned, same lady was serving us. She's like, you look familiar. I was like, I don't know. No, I wasn't. So did you ask me to turn off the music one time? I was like, no. It must have been my brother. I don't know. It wasn't me.
Like, hey, DJ Soy Sauce, you're not coming in here. You know?
They weren't happy, man. I was like, just change this. I could tell it wasn't like pre-pro. It's like, you're on Sirius or some shit. Just change the station. That's all I'm asking.
I'm just always, you know what I mean? I've just been adventurous and things. I can access what makes things interesting to me. But I do that with a lot of art. I do that not with music, but with literature, cinema, most definitely comedy as well.
So is all of that going through your mind as you're writing lyrics for the Crows or for your other groups?
I imagine. Yeah, I imagine it's something. It's all in there. But I think when it's time to focus like on writing a lyric or whatever, I've written songs with other people. I've written many songs on my own. The thing that is the Black Crows is Rich and I's contribution together.
Yeah.
You know, Rich, whatever he's coming from, will play me something. There's a lot of psychic energy involved in it as well. And music is a great conduit to open those kind of psychic channels.
And do you go into it with that intention? Like, do you have to set out to do that or does it happen?
I think there's other musicians who can do the fucking math and know all the shit and they do another thing. I've only ever been able to access it this way.
Got it.
This is my process because of however, because we didn't learn music. We don't know shit about music. I don't read music. Rich doesn't read music. But we know what it feels like and we know what sounds right. And then you keep doing that. Of course, through that, your vocabulary is bigger, but we maybe are using different words than people who are more knowledgeable about the inner workings and mathematics. The arithmetic of music is something that has escaped us. But I think it's also in our, that makes it folk and that makes, you know what I mean? There's some sort of, that's why we look at it more in like, it's kind of magic when a song happens out of the blue. 1 minute, there's nothing. One little thing like this, and then I get an idea. And then that changes what Rich is doing. And then it's all dictated by whatever the vibe is that Rich plays me. There's an emotional ingredient to what he plays me. Like probably our most famous song is She Talks to Angels. He wrote that song. He was very young with the riff. And then we probably didn't get to it till like a year later but we would be playing things around mom and dad's house.
Because he was like 17 when he wrote that.
Yeah, 17. I would be 19. So there's something about the way he pulls that first that would just put me in a place to write a song with that kind of dark, romantic, melancholy imagery.
Yeah.
But we do that today. And we do that, I think, especially if we get around to like where we're going right now or with this Happiness Bastards record and stuff. I mean, I think that's exactly what we've done with this. I mean, there's a lot more rock and roll on it. There's a lot more water under the bridge. We've lived a lot. Personally, I'm one of those people and I have two children and we want everything to be the best, but I'm also not afraid of adversity because I don't think you should be afraid of something that you have to find acceptance with, you know what I mean? Because it doesn't matter who you are, what you do. If you do it to yourself, if someone's doing it to you, if you have the means, if you don't have the means, no one escapes adversity. And it changes, you know what I mean, how we deal with it. The great energy and power of youth and where we came from in rock and roll was the anger, the fuck you part of it.
Yeah, even with each other.
but that boils into that. I mean, it's like live fire, you know? And like, but it's also of great, you know, if you can get that in the suit and you can get in the studio and get it on there. You know, we weren't clever enough to do the math. We were only clever enough to wear our emotions on our sleeves.
Did your parents pick up on your guys' tension?
Yes. I mean, fuck. Even more so probably the older we would get. But they weren't around when it was like, for some reason, you know, he had his own bedroom. I had my own bedroom when we lived in the suburbs. And I had like a twin bed and a desk, stereo, whatever. Rich had like a queen-size bed in his room for some reason. I don't know why he ever got that. But it was funny because when we were kids and it would be like, if we started getting annoyed, we'd have this game where we'd both get on the bed and he'd be like, I'm Mad Max. And I'm like, I'm Snake Plissken. And then we would like see who would win in a fight, Mad Max or Snake Plissken. And like, whoever could like fucking throw the other one off the bed was like the winner.
Listen, man, Snake always wins in that.
Dude, I was Snake Plissken. Got a patch on the eye, fucking cool outfit. I was like, my motherfucker there, you know?
So, yeah.
But like dumb shit like that. And then we've said it before, but we fought, brothers fight, but we would never punch each other in the face. We would hit each other, body shots, throw shit at each other, try to strangle each other. Nothing from the neck up. It was weird. I don't know. That rule always applied.
Unspoken, unwritten, just existed.
Don't face punch. I don't know. As if that like makes it like worse than all the other cruel shit.
I love it, man. I love it. Yeah, Snake doesn't need muscles, though. Just being a pure badass is sometimes enough.
Yeah, they couldn't stop You know what I mean? The crazies come out from under the street. He gets away from all of them.
Didn't matter.
Great soundtrack. Great soundtrack to them.
Amazing soundtrack. John Carpenter is always.
My favorite one is a movie he made called, is it called The Prince of Darkness? You know that movie?
I don't know that one.
Part of the trilogy he did that I think that Escape from New York, Prince of Darkness, and maybe They See or whatever. I think those are like a trilogy he made. But Prince of Darkness is a really cool movie, like in this weird church in Oakland or whatever is like where evil is and like this liquid container. And like these people find, it's really deep, man. But the soundtrack to that one's real. I listen to it all the time.
I miss that one. I like Assault on Precinct 13. That soundtrack's
amazing. Phenomenal. Very far ahead of his time, actually.
Way ahead of his time. It sounds like what's, you know, like a lot of like electronic composers would now go for.
Is he from Kentucky? I think he originally was from Kentucky. It's like if Tangerine Dream were from Kentucky.
Yeah, right.
If Tangerine Dream is from Kentucky, maybe they just call that like pineapple upside down cake dream or something. I don't know.
How do you feel about the new record? I think it sounds amazing.
Yeah, we're very happy. I think we were really focused on what we wanted the record to be. Touring the last few years and doing the Shake Your Moneymaker show, at first I was a little bit, I had a little trepidation about it just because I was like, oh, isn't that what other bands kind of get into sometimes is playing their most popular record or whatever?
Yeah.
But once I thought about it and I thought, yo, don't think about it, just do it. This is an important record to, you know, this is where it all begins for us. And let's revisit it. Let's see what happens if we remove ourselves from the way of thinking before. You know, why did I think that was dumb? Maybe it's not dumb. Maybe there's something there. And I think part of where the Black Crowes are today is getting out of our way and, you know, don't think it, do it. And then you'll have more information about what works and what doesn't. And it was fantastic. And that was kind of the impetus to get us to like a real focused, up-tempo rock and roll record that hits all the notes. I think that we finally can have the perspective to know what the Black Crowes sound like. And to me, Happiness Bastards is like an arrow pointed towards the future for us of what the Black Crowes could be. And once we work with a guy like Jay Joyce, who produced the record, who's very successful, popular producer. We've never really worked with like a super producer like that. You know, we met so many talented people and had so many great conversations. There was just something about Jay. Well, first off, we felt like this guy, not only can we get him, but he can get us. And we're incapable of doing something that we don't feel is sincere.
Yeah.
Sincere to us of what we are want to do and how it sounds. And of course, when he comes on board, he starts to help shape the songs as well. Like, all right, we have a discussion about what I think the record should be. What's the concept in a sense? I mean, you can't do it 100% because it's music and things change, but if that's what we're going for. And so he, you know, we have a bunch of songs. He comes in, tells us what he likes about these songs. We go back, work on some songs, write some new ones. But again, as we're in the studio making the record, it only took us 2.5 weeks to make the record.
That's quick.
Yeah.
It has that energy.
It has to be that way. Like I said, we're not the kind of people to, what are we doing, you know? And what are we selling? What do we want people to get from this? What are we putting out there in the world? And we haven't made a record in a long time. Basically, you got to like, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And if you're going to say this is what you are, then it better fucking sound like that.
Yeah.
And I hadn't made a record in so long and we've been talking about it. We've been proving it every night on tour of like what the presentation is, what the vibes are, what the band sounds like, where Rich and I are. But we're playing old songs and we're playing songs people know. And now to do it with something new, but after all the talk about we're a rock and roll band, this is where we're doing this, we're in a good place, we're creative. But then you have to do it.
Yeah. Do you think you could go out and play? When you go out on tour, you're going out on tour soon, could you play a lot of this album? Or do you feel you have to do a lot of the old stuff?
I mean, that's the purpose of the tour. And we've gone from bigger venues to a little smaller because we know, you know, there's always going to be someone like, this is our new single. And they go to the bathroom or whatever.
Yeah. But you want to play the new record. Like, that's the point of this.
Yeah, well, we feel that it's right there with the best of everything we've done. And as we move on from this new record and being able to focus on it for this period, of course, you know, we have to play She Talks to Angels, Hard to Handle, Jealous Again, Twice as Hard, Thorn in My Pride, Remedy. You know, we know there are certain things, Wiser Time, Soul Singing, whatever. We know there are certain songs. I think when we were younger, we were more arrogant and we didn't want to play along. We wanted to push people more into, we're more than just these hit songs. And that was our right. And we did it. And we felt there was some importance there that wasn't just egocentric.
Yeah.
But I think now we realize and that, oh, we can say the things we want to say, but we also have to respect our audience and know that somebody's going to be mad if you don't play She Talks to Angels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And by
yeah.
the way, I look at She Talks to Angels or Hard to Handle or whatever now in such a different light because I realize how special it is to have those songs in your catalog, you know, to
yeah.
have songs that we play for people, but that after almost soon it'll be getting near 40 years that have been in people's lives and it's important to them too. And they want to hear it and they want to hear you do the best you can do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
make it special and have that relationship with the audience.
Yeah. You said you feel like this is like an arrow pointing to the future. Like you want to do more Black Crowes music.
Yeah, I know it sounds weird to like, you know, start wrapping up my 50s and talking about it. But then again, you know, there's so much about what we are as a band and as artists and as people that looks like one thing on the surface, but is not underneath. You know, in the same way that it breaks my heart a little bit to hear like people, musicians say that they are bored or listless or not inspired. And I'm like, well, I don't feel that way. And this yes. record is really even greater sort of proof that I don't have to give up on my passion, on my creativity. I can put it all in the correct order.
Yeah.
And we can continue to move on. We don't have the same expectations that you had in 1995 when you made a record, when, you know, you're spending $1.5 million on a record and they want you to go out and sell fucking 10 million records and have 4 hit singles and everybody's trying to do that and the radio is pumping your songs all day long and that's how it used to work, kids. they play your records all the time on the radio and people would go buy your record. That's
yeah,
how it worked.
Yeah.
So even though that's gone, that doesn't mean we don't see or feel there is still some importance in that. And I don't feel that making albums is that antiquated or archaic or anything.
No. No.
You know, people say, you know, you go to fucking Amoeba, man. You're going to wait in line to pay for your shit. It's not like there's tumbleweeds blowing through a record store or something.
It's true. There are fewer around, but, you know, like, yeah.
Go to Freak Deep in the Valley. There's people in there, you know, and they have great records in there. It's like anything else. The media doesn't cover it because it would take too much imagination and interest in something that isn't status-driven, something that is collectively more dynamic, that contains more soulful information or something of a cultural reality that's not just reality TV and going to the gym or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And so you do feel like there's an arrow pointed in the future. You want to make more music, but you mentioned earlier maybe less touring at some point.
It's a deposition. I have to give you a date.
I don't know. I'm just curious. No, I'm just curious. Like, it's like, I don't know. Like,
I'm just
trying to figure out where you're at here.
I'm going to be answered by a grand jury.
I'm going to play this back to you.
I'm going to say, remember you said it. I'll be like, Jesus.
Reggie, your fucking Miranda rights, man.
Yes, there will come a time. It's not it's not in the near future, but maybe, you know, give me another. I don't know. It's hard to say, you know what I mean? Because getting a bit older is weird because I don't feel older, but like, oh, fuck, my knee hurt or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't dictate my dreams and passions, my age. But no, for the near future, and I think, you know, it would be pretty safe to say for the next decade of life, I want to keep doing it while I can.
Yeah.
That was another thing about the record. Like, let's make a fucking rock and roll record while we can still fucking rock and roll, man. You know what I mean? Because at a certain point, it's going to be a little like, you think you're rock and rolling, but intensity level comes down, which is totally normal and fine. But rock and roll is specific to a certain energy that you need. There's all sorts of things that you can be passionate and you can, again, have that kind of emotion and there's still a smoldering intensity to those things. But I think if you want to get out shake your ass a little bit, put on a rock and roll show. Hopefully people still get up and dance, and that's what it's about.
Incredible, man. Well, look, man, thanks for taking the time to talk. I love the new album. Excited to see you play it, and fun talking to you, man. You got a lot to say. I love it.
All right, I appreciate it.
Thanks to Chris Robinson for hanging out and talking about his career along with the Black Crowes' new album, Happiness Bastards. You can hear it along with our favorite songs from Chris on a playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced and edited by Leah Rose with marketing help from Eric Sandler and Jordan McMillan. Our engineer is Ben Tolliday. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like this show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today. The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored amongst some of the most influential leaders in industry. And me, I'll be there too. Enter now at tmobile.com/unconventionalawards. See you there.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.